And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba the Bloom, episode 83. Going to continue our positional recaps of the 2023 fantasy baseball season. Heading to the hot corner, the not-so-fun hot corner, though, at third base. Reviewing a pretty bleak position in 2023 and not a great outlook for 2024, honestly. But before we do that, you can find me on the Twitter at BDNTrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
We're good. Yes, the not so fun hot corner, but the so fun fact that we're doing this twice a week now. So this is the Tuesday night, the first. Well, I guess we've done Tuesday night shows before, one offs, but the first, I guess, the start of a new era for the show. Tuesday nights, Thursday nights. Excited to really dive into this, man.
It's like season three of Bubba and the Bloom coming at you twice a week now. It's gonna be fun. And you know, right now we're just doing reviews and then we'll do previews and that stuff. But for in season, we've been tinkering with ideas on what Tuesday I'll focus on, what Thursday I'll focus on, and it'll be ways to help you throughout your whole fantasy season. It won't be just like random stuff like, you know, Bench with Bubba, I ask a random guest on, we talk about stuff. No, this will be structure more than normal. So we're going to have some fun stuff for you guys throughout. Yep. As usual, I think we usually always bring fun stuff. I like to hope we usually bring fun stuff. So you guys will enjoy this. And I know Ryan was going to probably mention, but I'll also say it is, he hit me up with a text. I started reading them. Thanks for the reviews, people. Thoughtful one. So I'll give that to you, Ryan, because there was some that kind of blew me away. They actually liked the two of us talking together. It was pretty entertaining.
Yeah, I don't know. They said like a mix of humor and and knowledge, which...
So we know, we know who the humor is and we know who the knowledge is.
Something like that. Yeah. As you point to the wrong direction. So yeah, that's where the knowledge is. But yeah, we really do appreciate the reviews. Keep them coming, please. If you enjoy, listen to the show. I think we got like 7 or 8 written reviews this past week, and it was just really cool to kind of read them. I mean, a 5-star review is awesome, but an actual written review just kind of, and you can kind of tell who they are when they're written. So really appreciate that. And again, as we put more effort into the show, thus going twice a week, if you enjoy it, just give us a rate review when you can. I don't even know. I'm terrible at marketing. I guess it's Apple for written reviews. You can still review Spotify. I think like outside of that, you can't really review pods, which is weird.
It was pretty much, it was Apple only for the longest time. Spotify added it within like the last year. Google maybe can do it. No, I think possibly because Google does reviews on everything else, but it's Apple's, as weird it sounds, Apple's the ones that count. And that's the bad part because not everybody uses Apple, and I get that. But that,
I use Spotify. I used to use Overcast. Now I use Spotify. I haven't used Apple in a while. But yes, go to Apple.
What's the one I use? Overcast still. I still use Overcast. That's my go-to. You got me hooked on that a while back. But the reason, and I'll explain in like a 2-second review. The reason we shill for ratings and reviews is if you rate and review on Apple and we get enough rate and reviews, it moves up the list and more people find the podcast. That's the whole reason why we're shilling for it. Again, if you don't want to, totally understandable. If you could, though, much appreciated. And we will not bring this up on every episode, I promise. But it's just one of the things, if you have a few seconds, it'd be awesome. So
only FPAS promos every episode. That's we draw the line
golf,
there.
But golf, FPAS, those are the things we do every week. So
exactly. But it's good stuff there. Much appreciated, everyone.
Yeah, pretty awesome stuff. And like I said, is a rough position tonight, so it might be a quicker episode than usual too. So also keep your draft season has begun. Bring your listener questions. Just because we both tweet out like, hey, we're doing third base, it doesn't have to be third base. If you got questions about you're in an early DC or you're doing this or that, or we're not the biggest dynasty guys, but we can probably help you, keep guys. I don't know. If you have stuff in those regards, fire those off too. We'll get you going and pump their forecaster PDF comes out Thanksgiving, I believe.
Yeah. That's been like my life the last couple weeks. So player boxes are done. I think I said that on Thursday, and we're now just proofing the essays, proofing the intro sections and that sort of thing. The PDF is off to the printer on Friday and should be in folks' hands. So the PDF should be on Wednesday, next Wednesday, the
awesome,
whatever, 22nd, the day before Thanksgiving, as is tradition at HQ. So excited to get that obviously out, but then I can actually start focusing on like my own rankings, maybe even drafting at some point. That would be fun. I can't be like you, Bubba, you know, already starting. What are you, two drafts in?
This is technically my second. You're in the first with me, so don't give me that. Don't try to make me feel guilty on this. I started it on Saturday.
Good call. Good pull.
Yeah. Don't start putting me in the corner here. It's okay.
I like your draft. So like I saw a couple of your tweets. Like you posted the full board and good stuff. You got like Manny Machado and Paul Goldschmidt. We'll talk about Machado in a little bit. But then, of course, on brand, you did I guess you're like near the wheel or something. You posted two catchers.
I picked seven. I'm right in the middle.
Okay. And you got who? Logan O'Hoppe and who?
I went Bo Naylor and then Logan O'Hoppe at 13 and 14th rounds.
Look at the smile on his face.
Over the moon. Christmas came really early this year.
That is a pretty good combo at 13, 14.
Yeah, we'll talk about our preview, but if you listen to the review, you kind of got my feelings on those guys a little bit. And if you're able to zoom in on the yellow piece of paper, you could kind of see where I had things situated at FPAS. I've told you, if you go to my Substack, you can see my early rankings. You know where I like these guys at. It's sitting right there. That's not going to ever happen very often, but that way. That's going to be a very fluky situation. So,
benefits of drafting early. It's got its drawbacks, but it's got its benefits too.
Yeah, and this whole draft so far, in my mind, it's a definite benefit of drafting early. A lot of picks I will not get later on in draft, like Machado in round 7, ain't happening. Stuff like that. So, enjoy it while you can. All right, let's talk third base, and we have to. That's kind of the way we go about this. But before we get into it, Ryan put together a board as usual. And why don't you quick kind of your thoughts on what you see when you put this board together. And obviously we'll recap our thoughts at the end when we discuss it. But it's very centered around an early part of the draft. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, there were so similar to just kind of some general takeaways I have, and I'll throw it back to you. But similar to other positions, the top tier, with the exception of Manny Machado, produced pretty good value. So again, for new listeners to the show, we're showing on our YouTube or live stream and what I posted on Twitter leading up to the show on Tuesday night is this board of the preseason ADP. So we're looking at, back last March, we're looking at where the preseason third basemen were taken. We're comparing that to where they ended up per the Razzball Player Rater, and then we've color-coded some stats, average, homers, and steals. And yeah, four of the top five third basemen drafted in the preseason did return top four value. Manny Machado was the only one that did not. Jose Ramirez was picked first, finished third. Bobby Witt, who we talked about last week at shortstop, picked second, finished first. Devers fourth and fourth. Austin Riley was drafted fifth and finished second. So again, similar theme from other positions where the elite kind of stayed elite. And obviously you can't draft an elite player at every position, but I think it might be important at third base because when we go past that top five, good Lord, man, it gets ugly pretty quick. We'll talk about probably a good number of these busts in the early slash middle rounds. That stuck out to me. And then the other last part that stuck out to me at third base, Spider-Man GIF. Like these are all the same guys. Like these are very similar profiles where you have low batting average, a lot of power, you have like zero steals. You have Jose Ramirez with 28 bags, Bobby Witt 49. Again, Bobby Witt's not even third base eligible next year, but since this is a recap, we are including him. Nobody else stole more than 10 bases except for Josh Rojas, drafted in the top 20 of third baseman last year. It was only Ramirez and Witt. Gunnar Henderson had 10, but that was it. So like that was another thing that stuck out to me is we thought first base was rough in terms of speed. It's even more desolate at third base.
And just another takeaway, you mentioned, you know, Ramirez, Witt, Machado, Devers, Riley, the first five off the board. They went in the first 21 picks. So you had to take them within the first round and a half of a 15. They were gone by round 2 and a 12. So they went point. Like people, I think, understood the scarcity of the position. I know people hate hearing the word, you know, scarce and all that stuff, but like that screams it from the rooftops right there that they produced as you would hope they would. Like we, it's a broken record at each position. Like we talked about how smart the people are they're drafting now, because you know we see every position the top, so many guys are they're bringing back the value. But you had to take one of these five guys within the top 21 picks. And that's pretty wild. Yeah. Like, obviously there's some scattered throughout here, but you know, just we'll break into these guys, but you know, like the 9th, 10th third basemans, Justin Turner went at pick 256, Ha-Sung Kim went at 252, and Ha-Sung Kim probably went off the waiver wire in most leagues. So yeah, that's telling you everything you need to know about the position. Your top 8 third basemans went in the first 140, or the top, you know, 2, 4, 6, 8, top 9 third base board went in the top 8 picks, or finished 8th overall. So it's a very top-heavy position. There are guys sprinkled throughout here, but it makes you and I will say this. We're not going to do – we always say we're not going to preview. We always hint at 2024 when we talk. At sure. the end, we are gonna hit on a lot of guys that are going to join the third base pool this year, which will make things a little better, but not a ton, to be honest. Like you might get – we're going to get like 3 or 4 more guys into the pool. That's what it comes down to. So you're still, you know, top 10 in it. And so – in a 12-team league, you're going to have to get aggressive. In a 15-team league, you have to get really aggressive, or you're going to have to build your roster around like guys. These guys are producing at like middle infield producing numbers, and that's rough. That's real. Like that. Think about that when you're drafting a middle infielder in round 18. That's what these third basemen are producing that you're taking in like round 11. That's how bad it is. So,
and the other interesting thing too is, so 3 of those 5 that you had to take, Bubba, as you mentioned, that were taken basically in the top 20, 3 of those 5, Machado, Devers, Riley, didn't give you any steals. And in the stolen base environment that was 2023, that was my big reason for being out on guys like Devers and Riley. I didn't want to get guys that just didn't run. And so like, that's the trade-off entering, I think, 2024 as well. Is like, yes, the position drops off like a cliff. At least it did last year. How much do you weigh that versus not getting speed in one of your first 2 hitters, or not getting much speed if you go with like a Devers Riley kind of guy? So just interesting stuff to consider at this tricky, tricky-ass position.
Very tricky. And this is why we'll start off with J-Ram, third pick off the board. First at third base, finished third at the position. And this is what he went so early, though, goes to your stolen base thing. This is a guy last year at 24 homers, 28 steals at 282. Perennial, been a decent batting average guy, but you're getting 20 steals on the regular from a guy that in J-Ram at a position, like you just said, doesn't get steals. And this is why he gets like catapulted to the top. Now in early ADPs, he's got pick 13 now, so he's the back end of round 1. But slipping. It is slipping. Maybe people aren't catching on to the third base situation to that degree of steals, or they're constructing their rosters differently, which was very, very possible. But in 2023, this is one of the big reasons J-Ram was pushed up. So did he produce? Yes. Are you any thoughts on J-Ram? Because he was very good, probably as good as people hoped for, but still very good.
I mean, yeah, still had 24 homers, 28 steals, and hit 280. Like, and played every damn day again. J-Ram the last 2 years, 691 plate appearances in 2023, 685 in 22, even 636 the year before that. Like, he just does not miss games. And I think at that level, that Semien-esque level, that can be a skill. Just a hat tip to the guy, man. Like, he's only the 2024 will be J-Ram's age 31 season. Like, he's not that old. The stolen base success rate was 82% for J-Ram last year, above average. Like, the legs are still fine. Power's there. Contact's there. Like, this is a perennial. I mean, we talk about the safety of, like, Freddie Freeman in terms of, like, consistently returning first-round value. Jose Ramirez is just barely slightly behind that. And to be able to get that, if he is going to go in the late first round of 2024 drafts, I think I'll be all over that, especially, again, just looking down this stolen base column of what the third base position did not produce in terms of bags last year. You just get such an advantage by taking J-Ram there.
Yeah, 100%. It's that safety thing, that comfortability thing. Only going to be 31. The line's getting better around him, so there could be better counting stats to come in Cleveland. And then again, they might trade him still because it's Cleveland. I don't think they will because they gave him the deal, but you don't put anything past Cleveland in my mind.
That would be put anything past. You're right.
That's my only point. Like I would be like a probably 5%, like top 5% thing to happen, but I don't put anything past them at all. It's just the way they operate. If someone will take that money in their hands, if they're losing midseason, they'll do it. And that's just the reality of it. But yeah, JRAM is pretty darn legit.
Should have about 130 runs scored next year, Bubba, with your boy Bo Naylor hitting behind driving him, something like that.
With the Naylor brothers both combining for 100 RBIs each, easily. Yeah, it'll be beautiful. I'm telling you, the lineup's better. You got two Naylors in one lineup. What could go wrong? Absolutely glorious. The last thing I'm going to say on JRAM is mentioned the consistency of the comfortability. There's a reason why I had JRAM and Trey Turner like right behind Acuna, and everybody else did too, and it makes sense. So. Acted up that much. Bobby Witt's the next one. We talked about him a ton last week. I don't think we have a ton to add here besides the dude was dang good.
Yep, and like half of the stolen bases of third baseman combined leaves the pool for 2024.
Yeah, if you take Ha Sung Kim out of this, because I highly doubt anybody actually used third base and again waiver wire, if you just want to do top 20 third baseman like you mentioned, he probably is over half of the, or he probably beat the rest of them combined.
Yeah.
It's insane. It's just looking at this sheet real quickly. Wow.
It's bad.
Manny Machado, you mentioned I got him in round 7 earlier. Injured this past year, but still ADP of 15, so end of the first round of the 15. Third base one at the board. Still finished 12th overall at the position. I guess that's how bad third base was, but plus still had 30 bombs, 3 stolen bases, 2.28 average, 91 RBIs. Like I mentioned, injured season, only played in 138 games. He's having elbow surgery this offseason. He's expected back at the start of the season, maybe miss a week, not a ton of time as of now. So it's not like a big loss. And he might actually be healthy for the first time in a little bit. So, you know, injuries considered, I think he still had a pretty decent season.
Yeah. I mean, he was playing hurt big time. And good for him, decided to get the surgery, like, and did it right after the end of the season. I think it was October 2nd, October 3rd is when Machado got, went under the knife. And so like, yes, I am tossing 2023 from the record for Machado. Maybe that's bad process, but this is a guy with a track record that's almost unmatched. I mentioned Freeman before, JRAM. Machado's right there in terms of like consistently posting top 20, top 25 value. And I just think that the power outage, the even the lack of running game, as weird as it sounds with a bulky elbow, like if you're hurt anywhere, you don't want to run and just increase that risk or re-injure. So I think Manny Machado is a like prime bounce back guy. I think he's about the same age as JRAM. I think next year will be his age 31 season in 2024 as well. So like still has plenty of years. Like maybe the stolen base totals of like he had 12 bags in 2021, maybe that doesn't repeat, but I think you still get like high single digits with likely 30 homers again. I mean, he hit 30 last year. The batting average is going to go way up. So I think Machado is just like an obvious recency bias, bounce back, last year bum, whatever you want to call it, type of pick.
Yeah. And right now on through the first 12 DC, 7th third baseman off the board, ADP of around 74. He's gone as low as 128 in DCs right now. So definitely some time to enjoy it while you can type situation. Rafael Devers, he was the 4th third baseman off the board, finished 4th overall. And it was pretty much a Rafi season. 271, 33 bombs. That's the second most of his career. You know, 100 RBIs, 90 runs scored, 5 steals. This is what when you draft Rafael Devers, maybe you hope for a higher average, but pretty much 271 is probably about right outside of a few outliers. This is who he is. This is a Rafael Devers season. So I got just what you paid for.
Yep. I mean, no projection is ever easy or foolproof, but like this feels like one of the safer projections you can make in 2024. Basically, just take whatever he did the last 3 seasons. It's kind of all been the same in terms of underlying skills, and that's what you're going to get. It'll be 27 next year. Devers, it's probably someone who I'm not taking, at least someone who I need to just weigh what I was saying before of like not getting bags with one of your first hitter picks, but then also getting an elite third baseman. That's the kind of back and forth with it. But yeah, Devers, you know what you're getting, you know what you're not getting. either. So another fine season from Devers.
Yep, most definitely a fine season, and you get what you pay for. And I guess the reason I liked him at times in drafts is when guys like Austin Riley and Devers were together, I was thinking, okay, can Riley continue to do it? We've talked about it a lot last year. His there's questions, is can he hit for the average? Probably not. Does the power, all these things, are they there? And well, Austin Riley proved it's there. Let's put it that way. He's the fifth third baseman off the board, second overall by the player rater. And Austin Riley, 281 average, 37 bombs, 3 steals, 117 runs, 97 RBIs, third straight year of 30-plus home runs, third straight year hitting 2.7 better. I think it's fair to say we're starting to see who Austin Riley really is, and it's a good reason why he's now going around the same ADP as last year. So, yeah, Austin Riley, thoughts?
Now I was flashing the L while you were talking there, Bubba. One of my bigger L's. I didn't think he could hit 270. No, for me, I'm not taunting you as you speak. Not yet, at least. Wait till maybe later in the show. But no, one of my bigger L's, just because I thought the batting average would not repeat 270 what he hit in 2022, and I was right. He didn't repeat it. He improved it. And all the numbers you just ran through, just like I kind of feel like a perfect storm of like playing every day in a historically good lineup. 715 plate appearances, man.
That's nuts.
That is nuts. That is
especially
nuts.
For middle of the order. Like you think sitting at top or something, middle of the order.
He's not a leadoff guy. Like that's and had 693 last year in 2022.
Well, I hate to break it to you, Ryan. That offense is going to be good for a while.
I know. They have basically locked up all their key players and their children until 2070.
45.
So, yeah. That's not going to change at all. And, like, I would think Riley is going ahead of Devers in ADP now.
By only 4 picks, though.
Really?
Yeah, 23 to 28, 27, yeah.
I mean, I would gladly take the whatever stolen base or two from Riley with just the other 4 categories. It's just eliteness. I mean, 117 runs. What the hell? It's crazy. Yeah,
that production is going to be staying there unless somebody forgets to hit a baseball, which anything's possible.
It has happened. Not gonna,
yeah. I with that lineup around him, I find it hard to believe that long slumps are in the forecast for guys like that. Like they say hitting's contagious. Well, that team is contagious. So like watch out in a big, big way. All right. We said the top 5. Pretty easy. Talked about that already. Now it gets fun. So buckle up and prepare for the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Pour yourself a strong one.
Go get some of Ryan tap water from the basement. And let's have some fun here. And we're going to start off with Nolan Arenado, the sixth baseman off the board, still finished 14th overall. This is a member that was a part of many Bloom boards this past year because, like, will he bounce back? He finished 26 homers, 3 steals, hit 266. All in all, the end result wasn't horrific, but by no means was it Nolan Arenado.
Yeah, and this was one, too, where, like, I do remember I remember writing a article on the Speculator article speculating on hidden injuries at the end of April, and Arenado was the cover boy because he hit 2 home runs, 231 in April. Like, it was terrible. And then he went on an absolute tear in May, June, and July, hit over 290 each month, hit 6 home runs or more in each month. And then quietly kind of fell apart again in September. It was a weird, like, and maybe this is just random fluctuation of a season, but I thought I would look at the second half line of Nolan Arenado and be impressed as we pulled up the show. But like he hit 252 with 10 homers in the second half. You tack on that terrible April and like, yeah, it wasn't that great. The power metrics in the second half kind of fell off a cliff. I do wonder if there was some kind of, again, maybe I'll double down on hidden injury or something from Arenado in the second half. He was shut down with back spasms in September. So that's the latest RotoWire blurb on Arenado. September 22nd, he was shut down. So maybe that explains like why he was so bad late in the season. But again, we bring this up with CJ Cron. Like that may not go away as Arenado turns 33 next year. So
he's getting old. He's not me old, but he's getting old. So
no, he's only me old.
Yeah, he's you old, not me old. So that is definitely a concern to have as someone that wakes up every morning going, well, that part of my back hurting today. And so I get it. And he's much more athletic than I am. So makes a lot of sense in that regard. Alex Bregman. This is a player that in drafts last year, like, okay, I'll draft as long as I get Bregman or better, we're good. And weirdly enough, didn't feel like a great season. Seventh, third baseman off the board. Finished sixth on the player rater. I think that's more of a testament to the position than to Bregman per se. But 262 average, 25 homers, did score 103 runs and drive in 98. So that's a plus. And three stolen bases, play discipline still very good. But I think the year of the bouncy ball was definitely an outlier to who Alex Bregman is.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at the player rater kind of final rankings. It was, so it was Witt was sixth overall, Riley 14th overall, J-Ram 29th, Devers 32, and then a little bit of a drop, Bregman 49. So he was a top 50 hitter by the player rater.
All you hear are people like downplaying how bad he is, and he's still a top 50 player. That's pretty good.
Did he must have just volume? Yeah, 700.
It's the counting stats. It's the counting stats.
He just volumed his way to. I mean, he did. Yeah, exactly. 103 runs, 98 RBI. So 200.
It's very, very impressive.
It is. And that stuff matters. That stuff absolutely matters. He did it over 724 plate appearances, which is just bonkers. But it just goes to show if you can volume in a good lineup, like that's how Alex Bregman finished as high as he did. By only hitting 262, three steals, and 25 homers is those counting stats. That's impressive stuff from a team context standpoint. And that's why, too, like, just going on, like, random soapboxes at this point, but it's so important to consider team context when you're evaluating players in every year, but in 2024 as well. So don't just look at the skills. Bregman is he was a homer-to-barrel guy that we talked about at FPAS, too. This is like exhibit A for taking that team context into account.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Pretty impressive stuff. That's why I said when I saw him finish sixth and you said the 49th. It's like everywhere you turn, Bregman sucks, but I'll take a top 50 guy. Like usually if you could get enough top 50 guys on your team, you usually are doing pretty well. That's kind of how the game works. So I think it's a lot better than people probably thought in the end.
How many? How many? Quick question for you. How many guys do you think had 200 runs plus RBI last year?
Ooh, 200 runs plus RBI is. It's probably not as many as I think. Since you're asking the question, since Bregman's involved, I was gonna say like 14, but how many?
You would have been right. 16. You would have been.
Oh wow!
You would have been right. Deked you.
Yeah,
that's more than I thought. Low. That's a lot more than I thought.
I only say that because the offensive landscape of today. It's nuts. But
like Max Muncy had 200 exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we'll.
That's why he finishes eighth at third base, while hitting like what 212. We'll get to him in a couple guys, but batting average be damned. No stolen bases, one stolen base, homers, runs, RBIs, kaboom. It's pretty bonkers stuff. So maybe what we should really be looking at third base and the boards don't go, which is fine because this is what we're using for the boards. Maybe third base is where you get your homers, runs, and RBIs, or your runs and RBIs, and that maybe makes somebody more valuable than expected. So
there definitely are a few of those guys on this list for sure.
All right, the next third baseman off the board, the eighth third, finished seventh at the position. That's one Gunnar Henderson, and I bet you if you did a Razzball search and did – you know, just like second half or last like 4 months of the season or something, he'd probably finish higher. But Henderson, 255, 28 homers, 10 steals, scored 100 runs. We've talked about it because there was a point early season on boards and everything else about aggressiveness and should you drop Gunnar Henderson and all that kind of stuff. If you held on to him, good for you because he turned an absolute monster and was just named the AL Rookie of the Year on Monday. So, Gunnar Henderson produced in a big way. And before I give it to Ryan, he is currently the third baseman off the board with an ADP of 29 right now. So people are on board with Gunnar Henderson.
Yeah, that's earlier than I thought, but I kind of get it.
I won't have any shares at that price.
I kind of get it. I mean, he's going to be 23 next year, like top two consensus prospect. there could very well be another level. We talked about Henderson a little bit last week, so I won't rehash. But the passivity that we saw that I was frustrated with in the first half with Gunner completely flipped in the second half. Walk rate cut in half, a lot fewer strikeouts, and 17 homers in the second half. The trajectory looks very good for Mr. Gunnar Henderson. But yeah, sounds like you're going to have to pay up.
Yeah, you're going to have to pay up because he's going, he's right behind Devers by 2 picks. But then after Gunner, it drops 13 picks to the next guy. And then after that, it drops 32 picks to the next guy. So the cliff drops after Gunnar Henderson.
And we'll soon find out why.
yes, we will. It's a trend, folks. You mentioned him just a second ago. The ninth third baseman on board is Max Muncy, finished eighth on the player rater. I kind of joked because he hit 212. I had that memorized because I've seen his box score enough. 36 homers, one steal, but you hit the 200 runs RBIs. 95 runs, 105 RBIs. This is the second straight year where the batting average stunk. The last 3 years, the batting average stunk. But the power and the counting stats continue to thrive for Max Muncy.
Yeah, kind of like a Kyle Schwarber light almost, with no running game, terrible batting average, but like elite in the other three categories. So plan accordingly. Coming into the season, we'll keep this as like more of a recap. Like, remember, there were doubts with Muncy. He had a pretty bad 2022 with that elbow injury. And I would say, I guess 2023 was a success if you have those counting stats and 36 homers. I was expecting a better batting average. It just doesn't seem like that's going to happen with Max Muncy at this point. And he also, I believe, loses multi-position eligibility. He will be third base only next year. And so there's that. And if you tack on, if you give up on the batting average rebound hopes, 212 this year, 196 last year, for me, it's tough. It's tough to carry that batting average in whatever ADP is going. I would still think it's semi early. Even like around pick 100, that's tough.
167.
Okay. Still tough.
It's very tough still. It's tough because if you look at third base, he's going right next to Brian Hayes, Alec Bohm, Jake Berger. They're all in the 160s.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
He's got the track record. Yeah, I mean, we have time to figure it out. That's lower than I thought it would be.
Yeah, I always, for years, I wrote him off. I even wrote articles on it, and I know Max Muncy for me. Then I was all in on him, and then he comes out with the Tommy John situation. So I dropped off of him. And then last year at the price, the multi-position, I'm like, okay, maybe. Still didn't get much of him. That batting average is just tough. Like you said, we'll have plenty of time to debate Max Muncy at third base later on this pod's preseason. This next player held a prestigious award at the live FS Bloom Boards session. He was the 10th third baseman off the board, finished 33rd overall, 240 average, 17 home runs, 4 stolen bases, only 54 RBIs and 66 runs scored. This is one Matt Chapman. This is a bad line for a guy that should be much better, you'd think. But this is also why he finished 33rd. I wouldn't have picked 33rd. I would have thought it would have been a little better than that. Honestly. It just highlights how bad it was for Matt Chapman.
Yeah, that's tough to finish 33rd at the position while having 581 plate appearances in Toronto's lineup, which didn't set the world on fire last year. I'll admit that. But if you told us Matt Chapman would have 581 plate appearances in Toronto's lineup and finish 33rd, before the season, I'd say you're absolutely kidding me. So, yes, held that prestigious Bloom Board Award for homer to barrel, as we talked about on the live show at FPAS. Kind of the reason for that was him going to right center so much. It just didn't work. The barrels were not pulled, and pulled barrels are much better than non-pulled barrels. And so that explained at least part of it. Just a disaster season. And one of those other, because Chapman played every day, I'm pretty sure his percentage starting was very high all season long. Like you, he was a set and forget guy, Matt Chapman was, and you just kind of spent the whole season saying, oh, he's in the lineup today. He's in the lineup today. You know, he's hitting right behind Vlad and Springer and Bichette. Like, I'm just going to wait this out. And it just, it never happened, which is even worse than like an injury.
And now he's a free agent. So we wait and see where he lands on this next one. So it could get real rough real quick for Matt Chapman, but we will wait and see. This gentleman off the board, the 11th third baseman, finished 21st, though. That's Eugenio Suarez. 232 average, 22 bombs, 96 RBI. The RBIs really carried him here because he's usually a 30 home run guy. But outside of a little less power than you expect, pretty much the Eugenio Suarez you've come to expect year in and year out.
It was funny the seeing this because I forgot about this. But yeah, Chapman and Suarez were like neck and neck ADP, 159, 160. They were basically the same guy heading into the season. Low batting average, a ton of power. And the debate was Chapman or Suarez. Like, is there, you know, are they the same guy? Is there much difference? And turns out like they both kind of sucked. I mean, Suarez was a little bit better, but 22 home runs is not at all what you want from him. I had Suarez's box in the forecaster, and there's some like pretty noticeable steady trends southward.
Not good, right?
For Suarez, yes, like not good at all. He was able to volume his way. The reason he finished 21st is 694 plate appearances. If these trends kind of keep going the way they are, I don't know if Eugenio Suarez is even an everyday player in the majors next year. So it's it was a bad look for both Suarez and Chapman.
We will skip Jose Miranda, and I hope Daniel Mendelsohn is listening because he owes me a drink whenever it comes to FPAS again because he said he hit over 20 home runs, and I took the
under. What was the bet? 20 homers?
One. Yeah, I said I took the under on that one. So that was my Minnesota Twins preview on Bench with Bubba. So
Mendelsohn might have he might have an out clause with the injury, but he still, Miranda had three homers in 152 plate appearances.
Yeah, still got to do better. You got to do better than that.
I'm calling BS on the injury pass. Give him 450. Yeah,
he got demoted. Like he got demoted. You can combine his AAA homers.
That's
too,
true. No, yeah, you're right. That's probably not even injury. That's just demotion.
He got demoted. That happened there.
Let's talk about FS 24, Mendelsohn.
Yeah, bars open, baby. Alec Bohm.
Bubba's going to need that free drink to make up for year three of free golf.
I was wondering how long that was going to take. You got it.
He was struggling to break even. So you'll need that one. You did win the closest to the pin. So you recouped.
Yeah, I got a little bit of back that one. So that paid for your greens fees. So we're good. We're good in that regard.
Can't be too harsh on you there.
No, I was the only one that made the green. Alec Bohm, 13th third baseman off the board with a finishing position of 15. And this is a guy that I've always struggled with, but in the end, it turned out okay. 274, 20 homers, 4 steals. So the power was up from 2022, which is good to see. 97 RBIs and a great Phillies offense. Plate discipline's pretty nice. I don't know if I should really, really like Alec Bohm just yet. I know I have a listener question on it a little later as well. But what's your thoughts on Alec Bohm? Because like the barrel rate's still lackluster for me. The hard hit's not ideal. It's just kind of a blah profile for me for where I think you have to pick him.
Agreed. And I think with some of these other guys too, this is probably the theme of the position. His team context and a lot of volume kind of buoyed even to get to 15th overall at the position for Alec Bohm. Like 611 plate appearances in the Philly lineup. That's how he got those 97 RBIs. I mean, he only hit 274, 20 homers. Like, that's not, it's not that great. And so I look at Bohm like the last couple seasons. In 2022, he had 13 homers, 2 steals. So like last two seasons, 33 home runs, 6 steals in like 1,200 plate appearances. You're running the risk of getting basically an empty batting average guy. Who could still help, like, if it's in Philly and that lineup is still good again, which I expect them to be. It's not bad, but I don't know if there's another level here for Mr. Bohm. He'll be 27 next year.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm kind of, I don't know, I'm not going to say I'm out on anybody at that kind of ADP situation, but it's tough for me. The next two guys on the list, Brandon Drury, 14th third baseman, finished 18th. Ryan McMahon, 15th, finished 20th. We've already hit on them at other positions. Do you have any other thoughts on Drury and McMahon?
No, I think this is Drury's like fourth Bloom board that he's appeared on this year. So
yep, he's a multi-position guru. He's not quite Luis Rengifo, but he's pretty close. Next up, Jordan Walker, the 16th third baseman off the year, finished 30th overall, and it was a tale of two seasons for Walker. Finished hitting 276 with 16 homers, 7 stolen bases. But, you know, the hype train through spring training got him the gig, struggled, finished pretty decently, though, all things considered. I feel like he's played at least more consistently. If you look at first half, second half splits, technically his first numbers are better than his second half. But like, if you look at month by month, he feels like he got better as things went on here. So what's your thoughts on Jordan Walker in 2023 as he's hopefully, honestly, we've heard his name mentioned a lot as a big, big producer in 2024. But what's your thoughts on Walker for 2023?
Just a cautionary tale of spring training, man. Like it was the first pitch Florida game that Jordan Walker hit 2 home runs. And like every attendee there was like, oh my God, it was great power. And I'm sure it was like in real time. But you just got to take these spring training results with the metric ton of salt. I think, I forget the guys who Walker homered off in that game. It was 2 minor league pitchers, basically. So
I'm pretty sure their team forgets them too.
Probably if they're still on the same team. So just, I don't know. It happens every year come spring. Like we all get so excited and we want to dissect that baseball's back, dissect every result. And Jordan Walker, you tack on the prospect hype and you get that. Like you said, Bubba, the season wasn't like a disaster. But yeah, 2023 was not great. Will not be third base eligible next year. Jordan Walker will be outfield only and could very well break out as an age 22 guy next year. You just never know when it's going to happen, but it does happen with these prospects. It's just when, and I'm typically the guy who is not on the train that the year it does. I typically wait and sometimes I get burned by that, but whatever.
Yeah, I will usually miss out and I'll come paying a premium the following year is usually how I come to the party in these scenarios. We'll skip Josh Rojas, who had his like 2 weeks in the sun throughout the season. And we'll go to Josh Jung, who 18th off the board, finished 19th overall, only 122 games. If he doesn't get hurt, I'm very confident. I want to say top 10 third baseman is how I would have first saw that happening. Still finished 266, 23 homers, 1 steal, finished strong on the season, had a good postseason. So I love what we saw from Josh Jung in 2023. What about you?
Yeah, we talk about like volume on a good lineup. Texas is going to be that next year. So I didn't have much Jung. I think you had a lot more than I did, but yeah. The power pops off. I don't know if he's like a 270 hitter that we saw in the first half or hit 266 all year. I don't know about that, but I think the power could be pretty damn exciting. And again, you don't need to hit like 270 to do runs and RBI damage in Texas. You can go 240, 250 with that power that Jung has and do just fine. So,
yep, I agree. So that's interesting. And what else is interesting is we're about to skip a handful of players. Gene Segura, no.
Ouch.
Anthony Rendon. No.
Ouch.
Luis Urias. No.
Ouch.
Yeah, that was
dude. Those three guys combined hit 94th. Those three guys combined hit 8 home runs last year.
And stole 8 bases. Yeah, and hit, finished 86th, 85th, and 94th on the player radar at third base.
Which I don't even know how that's possible. Are there even 85 third basemen?
Yeah,
I guess Jose Miranda finished 100 in first, so
it's true.
Whatever.
True. So somebody took cake on that one. Now we don't have to go too deep into this, and I just wanted to highlight it for 1 second. I can't remember if we did it at another position, but DJ LeMay, who finished 41st in the position, I only want to bring this up because he was 243, 15 homers, 2 steals. He was a super utility platoon guy for most of the season, but when Rizzo went down and other injuries took place, we saw a little bit more out of LeMahieu, so that's why I just want to bring him up real quick. In July, August, 92 plate appearances, 108 in September and October. He hit 247, 291, and 245. So in the second half of the season, LeMahieu hit 273 compared to 220 with 8 homers and 2 steals in the second half. You saw a little bit more of what LeMahieu was. By no means am I saying he's ever going to return to that guy, but and not a 2024 show, but I would not write him off fully at his ADP these days. I just want to bring him up real quickly if you are doing drafts. Any thoughts on DJ?
Yeah, no, that's a great call out because I totally missed what he did in the second half, which, like you said, was like nothing special, but he showed signs of life. So, yeah, and I am one who I just look at DJ and I just write him off. And I mean, we'll see how much like leash he has for playing time, what that looks like next year when he's 35. But yeah, actually did quite well in the second half. It's a good call.
It did quite well. He's multi-position type guy, so just someone to keep an eye on. Like, he's first base, third base this year. Currently has an ADP of 413. So
right.
I wouldn't completely throw that to the curb. We talked about in recent weeks. Dude's a beast. Anything else on him?
No, we covered him. I think second base episode probably.
I did a lot on that one. Let's hit Justin Turner. Hinted at him earlier. He had an ADP of 256, 24th third baseman off the board, finished ninth at the third base position thanks to a 276 average, 23 bombs, 96 RBIs, 86 runs, 4 stolen bases. The dude was awesome. An old man that enjoyed the DH position at times while playing all over the field. He's a free agent this year, but he was great for Boston, and he showcased that he's just a pure hitter. That's just who he is, and not playing the field prevented that big IL stint he has every year.
Exactly.
He played hurt this year. He had a hand issue.
Exactly. And a heel as well.
That's right.
So I had Justin Turner's forecaster box, and you're right. Like, Bubba, you nailed it. Like, he is just a hitter. You look at the combination of contact rate, which we call in the forecaster, but basically K rate, strikeout rate, and line drive rate. Justin Turner's just a hit machine. Like, I don't care how old he is, he could roll out of bed, hit 275, which I think he will next year. He will be 39 next year. Like, and he did end the season pretty terribly. He had 102 at bats in September, hit one home run and hit 228 and went out literally with a limp because his heel was messed up. So like, that gives me some pause, but it's damn impressive. If he's healthy this off season, then I think he is going to be someone who, like, wherever he signs, I'm very interested in who he signs with and what that contract looks like, because presumably these teams will have done their physicals, their medical due diligence. Mets joke aside, like, where he signs and how much he signs for is going to be big for Turner. First base eligible only next year, which kind of stood out to me. You mentioned all the DH games, Bubba. That did cost him second base eligibility, which he was in season, and then obviously third heading into the season. So it will be a little weird to see first base only Justin Turner.
Yeah, definitely decrease his value in drafts, but at the same time, could be a value in draft and hold formats. So keep him on your radar. We talked about Yandy Diaz last week. He was the 25th third baseman, finished fifth at the position, thanks to that 330 average of 22 bombs. And then it's just a mix of guys I could not really care to talk about unless you have something. You have John Birdie, Yoan Moncada, who had an up and down, but more down than up. Brendan Donovan, who was hurt. Chris Taylor, who was hurt. And then Luis Rengifo, who we talked about last week. So any thoughts on the final five at the position?
No, I mean, so you did convince me a little bit on Rengifo last week. I got to give you your props there. You look at I'll keep harping on stolen bases, but like at third base, two of the top stolen base guys at the position are John Birdie and Chris Taylor. Especially Birdie, like, you could not play him last year. He just wasn't playing regularly enough, and even Taylor like had some stints where he was playing regularly, but like those guys finished in the top five of stolen bases at third base. Like, that's just wild to me.
Yep. It's rough. Rough indeed. So it's kind of pass on that one. But worst outliers as always. And this is where it gets fun, is Spencer Steer. He finished 11th at the position with an ADP of 395. And Spencer Steer did that. And he's actually got first base, third base, outfield, I believe. This
correct.
I just drafted him. I drafted him first
base, almost at second base too, because he had 16 games at second base. So in leagues where it's 15 games, there you go.
Yeah, 271 average, 23 homers, 15 stolen bases, played 156 games. it felt like they made a point to get him out there somehow. He's that super utility that they, even with all the talent we always talked about on Cincinnati, somehow Steer found a spot in that lineup.
Yeah, absolutely. And like the metrics are like fine. Like I don't know if there's another step up from Spencer Steer. It's weird to say. I think I've said this a few times, so maybe it's really weird to say, but this could have been his career year, like as a rookie. He'll be 26 next year. 665 plate appearances. That's a lot to repeat. But and none of the power metrics are like truly plus. It's just kind of those like one of like jack of all trades guy who in the right lineup in the right park, which he is in, with enough playing time can really work. And I know the Joey Votto news probably helps Spencer Steer either directly or indirectly in that infield next year.
Yeah, definitely. He could be the first baseman, and Encarnacion Strand can DH. There's a lot of ways it can go with the moving parts there at first base. So I do like I'm interested in Steer, let's put it that way. I think he's kind of one of the – feels like a forgotten man, even though his ADP is around 100 right now. Isak Paredes, 13th at the position, ADP of 315. Talked about him at FPAS. We had Jason Collette talk about him a bit as well. 31 home runs, 98 RBIs, hit 250. The perfect example of pull everything. So what do you got on Isak Paredes, who I love? I don't know. This could be his career too, right? I'll beat you to the point on that one. But what's your thoughts on him?
That's what I was probably going to say, like 31 home runs. Come on. Maybe I'm wrong. But and like the BABIP for Isak Paredes has always been pretty low. So like I'm probably like one of the lower ones on Isak, but prove me wrong this year. And as we kind of showed at FPAS when I pulled up those spray charts, like this is the pulled home runs. It's what he does. It's not just a 1 year one-off type of thing. This is his approach at the plate. And plays everywhere, so like won't be second base eligible in most leagues entering the season, but probably will be at some point. And then you get first and third too. And in Tampa, like we think of like Platoon City, Paredes is one of the few guys that does get regular playing time there.
Yep, he's a big one for sure. Jake Berger, 16th at the position, 80-598. Loved me some Berger throughout the season. Finished with 34 bombs, 250 average. Left the cesspool that is the White Sox, went to Miami. Second half of the season, hit 279, 15 home runs. Dude mashed in Miami and just had a big season. I'm excited to see what's to come for him next year. He's 27 years old. He definitely intrigues me, especially when I mentioned the ADP of like he's going right picks behind Max Muncy. I'm sorry, but Jake Berger makes it a very compelling case for me.
I do. Yeah, I agree. Like Berger does not have the track record that Muncy has, but like it would not shock me if Jake Berger leads the National League in home runs next year. Like that's a little bit out on a limb call or whatever, but like I could totally see that happening. And he makes enough contact to where I doubt he hits a Max Muncy in 212, even 230. Like he hit 250 last year. Like I think that's repeatable. So Jake Berger, the thing with Berger was like, I mean, we all loved him. It's just, he was on the damn White Sox. He finally got out of that dumpster fire and presumably will play regularly in Miami as he should. So excited for Berger. Not as excited about the ADP. I thought maybe we could sneak him in a little bit, but it's not happening.
You can see how happy he was to be out of there. Like the second he goes to Miami, they're having like Monday Burger Days, like discount burgers.
Yeah, they had like burger promos.
Yeah, like they were doing things for him immediately. It's just like White Sox, you're idiots. Like A, you could have made money on him, like should have, and B, you saw how happy he was. Like he's promoting it and having a great time, and it's just like you White Sox, you suck. I'm sorry. Like if you're a White Sox fan, more power to you. But the team was a disaster, and it's going to be for a while until the people in charge leave. Like it's just bad stuff there.
Apologies.
Heimer Candelario. Yeah, my T's and P's. Heimer Candelario, 17th ranked at the position, ADP of 408. I'm a big Heimer Candelario fan. Finished 251 average, 22 homers, 8 stolen bases between the Nationals and the Cubs. Kind of banged up towards the end of the season, but yeah, a good season. You have to premium from good fill-in guy throughout the season on the waiver wire.
Yeah, the weird thing was for Candelario, he had eight steals. Previous three seasons combined, he had one. So this was pretty much out of the blue. Like we kind of drafted Candelario or picked him up cheap because he was just playing every day for Washington. and just kind of parlayed into a pretty good year. But I don't know. I wouldn't be like excited if I had Candelario as my corner infielder in 15 teamers. That's probably where he would slot. It would just be like a meh. Okay, I got him. Let's hope he plays every day.
Yeah, in 12s, he was a good streamer during that. Like the weeks we talk about the Nationals having great matches before he's traded, he was a phenomenal pickup to have on weeks like that. That's what Kennedy was there for. A couple other names I want to mention, talked about them before the show because they didn't make the list because they either didn't play enough to qualify or whatever, didn't rank high enough, didn't get drafted, the peripherals that make the board. But then bring them up before someone says, oh, you forgot so-and-so. Here you go. Your second, third baseman off the board in 2024 right now. Next year, you get to do De La Cruz. He's up there. Your sixth third baseman off the board, Royce Lewis. Those guys weren't in the top, you know, 30, whatever's going about. So you'll have them. I also wanted to mention you have like Noelvi Marte. He'll be coming into the mix. We saw him in September with the Reds. So there's at least three more young guns. There's a handful more if you just go look at the list of third base ADP. But wanted to bring them up if you had any thoughts on their seasons. We know like Royce was a beast when healthy, I should say. Elliot De La Cruz, we saw the fall off towards the end of the season. Now the reports are coming out. He was fatigued, they're saying. And then Noelvi Marte played pretty well, I thought, when he got his chance to play. So any thoughts on those three?
Yeah. Royce Lewis for next year just seems ADP of like 40 just seems way too high. That's someone who like, no, I have not done much 2024 prep at this point. It's all been forecaster, but like I can already tell I'm not going there given the injury history. But someone who could very well be a first rounder in 2025, I fully admit that. And same thing for Elly De La Cruz, pretty much. Basically say the same thing, except for the injury part. It's more the performance and the in-season slide that Elly had. I don't know what to make of Noelvi. Just haven't seen enough of him or have dove in yet on what he did this year.
And do you have your player rater up right by chance?
I do.
You tell me, because I know what happened. I know what happened because of the formatting of your board. Can you tell me where Cabrian Hayes finished? Because he should have been up on this board.
He finished 194.
At the position?
No.
Holy shnikes.
No, he didn't finish 194 at the position.
I'll go, holy shit. Like, wow.
See, you're making me do... Okay, here we go.
I asked before.
24.
Okay, that's better. And that makes sense because he played 124 games. He had that wrist injury and the back injury, but still Cabrian finished with a .271 average, 15 homers, 10 steals. I wanted to bring him up because his ADP is around 160. He's around the Muncy Burger range. When you look at his splits, once he got healthy, because he missed all of July pretty much, he had three at-bats in July, comes back in August, hits .320 with six runs, September .280 with four home runs. So the second half of the year, .299, 10 homers, 31 runs, 29 steals. Looked like a brand new man out there. Honestly, I'm surprised his ADP isn't higher. Any thoughts on Cabrian Hayes, who I just know because that old apostrophe thing, that's why he probably got kicked off your Bloom board. But any thoughts on him?
Good call to bring him up for sure. I am a big Cabrian Hayes fan. I wrote a deep dive article on HQ like mid-season for Cabrian Hayes. Was like the skills are so much better than what we're seeing out of him, and then you finish strong like that. The ADP sounds pretty palatable. What you just said, I know the lineup like sucks, but it may not be like horrible if Brian Reynolds is still there, and I don't know, O'Neill Cruz is back. Like they're that, the front Jack. End of that. Yeah, Captain Jack has his spurts. Like the first, I don't know, top four in Pittsburgh might be okay. So maybe there's that going for him. But yes, I do like Cabrian Hayes. That's a good call to bring up, and probably didn't make it because the apostrophe.
Yeah, no, it's all good. I just wanted to bring him up because that's another one where I'm just scrolling ADPs. I'm not gonna mention everybody because like Junior Caminero obviously wouldn't apply, and we'll have to talk about him later in our preview. But to Brian, the way he finished was definitely worth it. Quick topic of conversation.
Yep.
All right, let's talk. Final thoughts on third base before we do listener questions. We kind of hit on thing early on, but anything else stand out to you as we went through the player pool?
Just as we talk through it, I'm either going to go elite early or just try and get one of those team context guys that we brought up kind of throughout the show. See if you can kind of sneak in a mid rounder who plays every day on a good team. That will probably be the approach for me for 2024.
Yeah, it's ugly, but we'll get into the preview later. There are some this feels like first base last year. There's some pockets that look interesting. We'll just see if they can pan out type things.
Pockets had holes in them. Yeah, at the end of the-
they had some big holes in them. Empty pockets is more like it. Let's take some listener questions here. We have a couple of them. Brock Tyson asks, Ryan McMahon was pretty bad this year. 42 WRC plus versus lefties, 32% K rate in the second half, bottom five in zone contact percentage. Feels like he might even be overdrafted for next year. Anything you guys can get optimistic about? I think you're down on him based on last week's discussion or second base discussion we had.
I took him in our DC at 256 overall because I needed a body at second base.
Not a bad ADP at that point.
And just to get the middle corner, like in a draft and hold, that is a nice boost. And he plays every day. Notice how I haven't mentioned like a single skill for Ryan McMahon of like why I'm convinced. But yeah, I just think this is kind of a boring like 250, 20, 25 home run guy, but who will play. And from pretty a streaming standpoint, day. Maybe play him at Coors and in a draft and hold, you're going to get playing time at middle and corner. And that does have value, even if the skills to me don't pop off the page. The power metrics have looked pretty good throughout his career. He just doesn't hit that many fly balls. He's a line drive ground ball hitter, 33-34% fly ball rate each of the last two seasons, which is not very conducive to power.
Yeah, that's been my thing with him pretty much forever. Like you can almost pencil in his stat line. It's been pretty consistent the last 3 or 4 years, it feels like. You get that multi-eligibility. And like you said, I look at his numbers, and I'm like, there's so much more there if he could tap into it. And it's like, is he going to do it 1 year or not? I don't know. Maybe not. But at his ADP, and in like in 15s, it's a good kind of boring, safe guy. 12s, you probably have better options type stuff. So definitely league dependent. But it feels like there's more there. At worst, I don't think he's killing you. Let's put it that way. So that's my thoughts on McMahon. BP at futures_bet asks, does Alec Bohm take the next step, more aka more power? Also, do you think he keeps that premium spot in the loaded Philly lineup? We kind of gave our thoughts on Bohm already. Not overly optimistic on Alec Bohm right now.
Yeah, I mean, the first question we covered, like, no, I don't see another step in Alec Bohm given what we've seen in his pretty large MLB sample size at this point. The lineup is key. The lineup will be key for Alec Bohm. Like, will he drop to eighth in the order, ninth in the order? I don't think so. If he can stay fifth or sixth or somewhere in that range, that just gives that runs an RBI like a chance. So, not too high on him, but there is a team context there. So,
yeah, no Reese Hoskins coming back should help, but we'll see who they replace him with. So, see where that goes.
Yep.
Oregon Ducks 2 asks, you guys going to do 20 minutes on Bubba's Boy, the interesting Luis Rengifo? I said, no, you're welcome. Spare us the time. You can go back and listen to second base for that, or shortstop for that matter. So, no. And then John Wilder, this is the one, because he's in a NFBC 50 right now, drafting right next to me. So he says, any good third base targets after pick 300, asking as a friend, not someone who's going to snipe anyone in a current draft. John is a really good guy, really good fantasy player. He's a fun one that was in TU with us. And because I'm a nice guy, I'll give you some, John, at the position. If you like prospects, Colt Keith's there, but I'm not a prospect guy. I would look at Wilmer Flores. I'm still a believer there. I like him a lot. Don't mind Matt Vierling. He's boring, but he's got the multi-position, which is good. You got Jay the Matthew down there. Those would be a few I'd look at. I won't give you all of my options. Do you like anybody outside of 300?
In a fab league where like we're, I know this isn't a fab league, but I'll just throw this out there. I'll go Brett Beatty, just kind of that post type prospect. Like he has not shown much in the majors, but like at any time, I feel like that could click. It's a little tougher to do Brett Beatty in a draft and hold where you need the playing time. So I will say Luis Rengifo. Bubba, you have turned me on to this guy. With that second half finish and multi-eligible positions and playing, I think playing every day for the Angels who
possibly leading off for the Angels. At least he'll accumulate. Let's look at it that way.
Like I think that's pretty we just talked about McMahon accumulating and playing multiple positions. I think Rengifo, who's going like 70 picks later, That could work.
All right. And we have a late question in the YouTube chat here from one Roger Bloomfield.
He says, man.
Pick two of the three for my FS team. Do you pick Mountcastle, Pascantino, or Hoskins? Two of the three.
I might have to abstain. I'm commissioner of this league.
For now, I go Pascantino and Mountcastle just because I don't know where Hoskins lands, but Hoskins, and how he rebounds from his injury. I'm going to go Vinny P and Mountcastle there. And then on the next one, Candelario, Zach Neto, or Rengifo. I go Rengifo and Candelario probably, but Neto's close. It's real close.
I'll assume the rest of the league isn't listening at this point in the pod, so I'll go for fear of colluding. I'll go Hoskins, Vinny P in that first group, and then Rengifo and probably Neto.
Yeah. That last group, I don't mind that. It's like if you power, Candelario's got a little more. If you need everything else, Neto's your dude. That's kind of how I look at it. The question is, do you want two Angels on your team? So wrap your head around that one with Rengifo and Neto.
You typically don't, unless it's Trout and Ohtani.
Yeah, you usually don't want that situation there, but we shall see. And on that note, we wrap up third base. So any other final thoughts for the week's – this Tuesday episode, not the week's episode, Tuesday's episode, as we'll be back in two sleeps to break down the outfield, at least part one of the outfield. We'll see how we break it all down, but part one of the outfield and go from there. So final thoughts is with our first official Tuesday episode in the books.
Yeah, it's going to be rough waking up tomorrow, and normally it's Friday, but it'll just be Wednesday. So that's one downside to this deal. We'll switch over to outfield part one. We'll probably do two outfield episodes, cover like the top 60 ADP, and then breakout guys after that, and then flip over to pitching. We're getting there, man.
Yep, we'll be there before you know it, and then it's hardcore draft season. So buckle up. Maybe we'll do a live gladiator. We'll do all kinds of cool stuff.
Once we finish out recaps, we've had some questions for like a draft and hold episode, which would be kind of cool to do. We'll start looping in some bloom boards because I really ramp up bloom boards in like January. So we can talk about those many episodes. And then, yeah, like you said, Bubba, drafts. So we've got, I'm not too worried about filling content for twice a week.
No, not at all. We rather actually might need a third episode. Just kidding. Want you to, stay happy in your household, but we'll leave it at that. Make sure you guys check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanVHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm at BD Hendrick. As always, thanks for listening, everybody. This was Bubba and the Bloom episode 83. Catch you all next time.